This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we find ourselves in the rather welcome waters of Mystery Hour. The way it works is this. People ring in with questions. One of them could well be you. Questions that are mysteries. Questions that you know must have an answer, but you are currently unaware of what that answer may be. And they can be silly or serious, scientific or not, you know, just absolute curiosities. And then someone else will ring in with an answer. It sounds a little bit thin, doesn't it? It sounds like weak beer, but it's not. I don't know why, but over the years it's become a cherished augmentation to the radio station, and one of the loveliest things that's ever happened to me, because not that long ago we launched an actual board game based on Mystery Hour, which is available in all branches of John Lewis. You can get it online, get it on Amazon. Mysteryhour.co.uk is probably the best place, because it's just brilliant, which is why so many people love it. Sometimes I even get cross with people for loving it too much, because I think, well, the other 14 hours of the week are the main course. This is just the pudding. Okay, I mean, don't ring me to tell me that everyone prefers pudding to main courses. You know what I mean. This is the side hustle. Mystery Hour is the side hustle. The other 14 hours of the week are the main hustle, the main job. So, as I get older and more mature and at peace with the universe, I get less cross with people who sometimes give me the impression that this is the only part of the week they'd even tune in for. I think Keith used to be in that category back in the day. Terms and conditions, by the way, can be found on the website, because there is a little competition running under the whole hour, and that competition is this. My favourite caller, my favourite contributor, will get a free game, a Mystery Hour board game. Box fresh, signed, sealed, delivered. Not signed, but sealed and delivered. I'll sign it if you bring it to an event or something like that, but it is quite bulky. I think we'll just crack on, shall we? Shall we just crack on? I mean, don't be boring. Don't ask anything that is obvious, like, you know, well, I won't give you examples, because then some joker will ring in and ask it. And be polite, because that my colleagues answering the phones are doing their best. They have more to get through this hour than they do on any other hour in the whole week on LBC. So don't please be mean to them or impatient with them. And I'm afraid our judgment is final. If they think your question's rubbish, then it's not getting on. And I know that may be a grave insult or a grievous offence, but that is the way it works. And if you hear someone else ask a question, then ring in with the answer. The only real rule is that you're not allowed to look it up, obviously. That would make a mockery of the whole practice, but apparently some people do need reminding. Just as some people also need reminding not to swear, which we've been reminded of on the programme this week on at least three separate occasions with three different people. We used the Dumbarton three times in 2 days, did we, Keith? Is that right? Three times in about 5 minutes. But then yesterday again. So there was the Irish gentleman on Tuesday, three times in 5 minutes. And then yesterday we had the other one, didn't we? We had yeah. I think we've broken the record for the number of times the Dumbarton has been used this week. And no, apparently not. On this programme. Yeah, on this programme. But I mention all of that because, of course, there are many, many new people listening all the time. And that means that perhaps you don't realise, particularly Irish callers, who apparently can get away with a little bit more than we can over here. Australian callers, don't even go there. I'm terrified every time an Australian comes on the programme, because an Australian talkback radio, as they call it, talkback radio, anything. Well, shut up, James, will you, and just get on with Mystery Hour. Seriously, people want to win a board game. John is in Lyon. John, question or answer?
Hello, James. We have a question. Me and my 8-year-old daughter. Shall I put it on? I'll ask her not to swear.
Okay, you shouldn't really have done that without clearing it with the producer first.
Oh, sorry.
No,
sorry,
that's all right. We can do it on this occasion, but yeah. I don't want other people to follow your lead, because there are all sorts of rules and regulations governing it. But I don't want to frighten. Don't tell her I'm a scary man. What's her name?
She's called Emily.
Okay, let me talk to Emily.
Good morning.
Hello, Emily. How are you?
I'm good.
Fantastic. What's your question?
So my question is, if you can have your tonsils removed, what's the point in having them in the first place?
That's a great question. Have you had your tonsils removed?
No.
Do you know someone who has?
Well, I've seen a TV show about a girl who's getting her tonsils removed.
What do we...
And I'm wondering, if you can get your tonsils removed, what's the point of them in the first place?
It's a brilliant question. Do you want to know something funny?
Yeah.
When people ring in with a question, my colleague puts it on a screen. The lady that your dad spoke to puts the question on the screen, so I have a little indication of what you're going to say to me. Does your daddy wear glasses?
No.
No, I see. I should really wear glasses when I'm at work because I'm getting a bit short-sighted. And I read your question on the screen, but I read it wrong. Do you know what I thought you were going to say?
No.
I thought you were going to say, if you can have your toenails removed, why do we have them in the first place? I thought you can't have your toenails removed. What's this crazy person in France talking about? You can't have your toenail. What would happen if you had your toenails removed? You'd be in absolute agony. You wouldn't be able to walk. So I'm very... So I'm very glad that you said tonsils. I want you to promise me one thing, Emily.
Yeah?
Promise me you'll never have your toenails removed.
I promise.
Thank you very much. Why do we have tonsils, given that we never use them? I think I know the answer, but I'm not going to start mansplaining to an 8-year-old girl. Even I have some standards, so I'll let somebody else ring in and provide the answer to that one. Meanwhile, from one tourist destination to another, Gareth is in Weston-super-Mare. Gareth, question or answer?
James, I've got a question for you, please.
Carry on.
The saying, she'll have my guts for garters. Where does it come from and what does it mean? Right. I've used it myself, but don't actually know what it means.
I like that one. Yeah. I don't know either. I think we've all probably used that. We've got all the G's here as well because I'm writing down the question. Guts for garters, Gareth, I've got at the moment. Gareth and guts for garters. It's obvious what it means, isn't it? It's a cut you open and use your entrails for something relatively trivial and unnecessary, which would to convey the... Well, you don't need me to explain.
No.
I'll find out for you. I usually Wayne in Basildon rings in at this point, but he's on his holiday at the moment. He's gone away. I don't know whether he's going to be able to... Give us the benefit of his Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable is the volume that contains all the answers to questions like this. Thank you, Gareth. Guts for garters, origins, please. Two things. I'm only allowed one origin of a phrase question a week, generally speaking, because otherwise, oddly, believe it or not, the show can fill up with them. It's a real area of curiosity and interest. So don't feel inspired by Gareth's question to ring in with a similar one. You'll have to wait until next week and hope that you get on first. And just a quick word to John and Emily and Leon in case the excitement of getting on the radio and my toenail-based comedy was not enough, I have to remind them that if you're ringing from overseas, you can't win the Mystery Hour board game. So I don't want anyone to accuse me of being a Grinch at any point in proceedings today, because otherwise it would be a very early lead for Emily on that one. But the terms and conditions, which you can find at lbc.co.uk, do make clear that you have to be listening and calling from the United Kingdom. Anthony's in Cardiff. Anthony, question or answer?
Hiya, James. Hello. It's a question.
Carry on.
Why are Prime Minister's questions and usual debates in Parliament, every question's got to go through the Speaker before the person can answer?
Yes.
I have no idea why.
It's just convention, isn't it? I mean, it's like the referee.
Yeah. It's just strange. I let's go, oi, Boris, behave yourself.
Yes.
That's a dirty question for once.
We want someone to explain the convention and the tradition. Why can't they speak directly to each other in the House of Commons?
Yeah.
It's always, Mr. Speaker, my honourable friend has said this or my honourable friend has done that. I think it's just to keep it on the, supposedly, to keep things civilised so you can't start biting chunks out of each other, which is not very convincing, is it? Particularly in the current context. But it's on the board, Anthony. I like it. Why does it all have to go through the speaker?
Brilliant. Cheers, mate.
Top man. Stephen's in Tower Hamlet. Stephen, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
How do birds know how to make nests?
I mean, to be honest with you, Stephen, if I were on Mystery Hour and I were asking a question about the innate abilities of birds, I'd probably ask, how do they know how to fly?
Well, I'll call back next week with that one.
But the reason I make that point is because I'm not sure that the answer would be any different. They just do. Yeah. They just do.
Well,
it must be some sort of genetic memory, some evolutionary memory, no?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I want to find out how. Like, so basically, I was looking at a wood pigeon just making a bit of a hash of one the other day, and there was, just picking up a branch that was way too big and flying into a bush and getting repelled and stuff like that. So, Yeah, I just want to know, like, who shows them, because they're an egg when they, you know, when they're born, well, prior to hatching.
Let's leave the science out of it, shall we? I can bore for England on this, but I've watched some local swans. It's all gone a bit partridge, hasn't it? I've watched some local swans nesting lately, and I think there's two pairs near me, two nesting pairs near
right.
me. One is quite mature, I think, and they've managed to successfully raise six cygnets, which have now got well beyond adolescence. I saw them yesterday, and I think they're out of the woods. And then a younger pair, which only brought three to hatching, and only two have survived. And they built their nest on a towpath. I mean, it was on a bit that pedestrians can't access, but it looked to me, and it wasn't anything I could do to communicate this with them, Stephen, not being able to speak swan. But I wanted to tell them, guys, that's not really good. Not a great place to build a nest. And it's not, a swan's nest isn't a very sophisticated business. It's not like a structure. It's more of just a bed of twigs and stuff. But so they must get better at it over the years.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I guess it's in their instinct, but I just want to kind of hear from some sort of bird expert that...
How do they know how to make nests?
Yeah, because they're an egg and then they hatch into an egg.
Let's leave
nest.
That. Let's not go there again. Leave the eggs out of it, all right? Because, I mean, how does a baby know how to crawl?
Well, yeah, they just get pushed out of the nest, don't they?
Well, I mean, admittedly, a baby probably couldn't build a nest, but I bet you a cold baby at some point would work out that he could pull a blanket over herself or... Yeah, well, let's move on now. Well, how do birds know how to build nests? Why is everything in the House of Commons conducted through the Speaker? What's the origin of the phrase guts for garters? And why on earth do we have tonsils if they're so useless that we can have them removed without any problems or inconveniences whatsoever? A lovely selection of questions, and the time is still only 12:15.
In the trade, get quality timber at Wix. Pick up 2.4-metre stud work CLS timber from £4.28 as a Trade Pro member. Terms apply. Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 12:16. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Got four excellent questions on the board and room for lots more. Suraj is in Watford. Suraj, question or answer?
I've got an answer.
Carry on.
It's for the tonsils question. So we need our tonsils because they help us fight infection. They can catch viruses, bacteria, but in doing so can become really inflamed and can become infected themselves. So
they do serve a purpose, but it's a purpose that sometimes we can live without for the greater good, as it were.
Exactly. So if we have one or two episodes of tonsillitis in a year, that still works in our favour. But if we're having six or seven episodes of tonsillitis, then the risk of infection and the risk of that turning into something like sepsis and causing and spreading to the rest of the body means that the benefit of removing the tonsils and preventing that risk is greater than the risk of purpose that they're originally serving, which is to try and help prevent infections.
So they're useful but not essential, and their usefulness can be outweighed by the susceptibility to infection.
Correct.
Well, beautiful answer. I hope Emily is delighted with that. Well, hang on. What are your qualifications?
I'm a doctor working in paediatrics at the moment, so I see lots of tonsillitis.
I bet you do. Do you still get ice cream after you've had them removed?
Yes.
Why do you sound so unhappy about that? It was one of the reasons...
No, because we don't get ice cream.
Oh, poor old Dr. Suraj. He wants an ice cream. It's a lovely answer. Thank you, mate. Thank you for the work you do as well. 12:18 is the time. I won't do the toenail stuff. That was strictly for eight-year-olds. Steve's in Newbury. Steve, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
I was watching a programme with my son the other day, and there was a chap on there, and he was rearing some pigs, and he was feeding them ale, and I can't remember what the vegetable was. It might have been aubergine or something like that, but what he was saying was...
Very middle-class pigs. But it was craft ale as well, wasn't it? Go on.
When he slaughtered them, that they would taste of what he'd been feeding them. So my son turned around to me and said, Dad, if you fed a cow strawberries, would the milk taste of strawberries?
So the question is, I think we know the answer to the second one probably isn't true.
Right.
Because that's milk, but the meat might. No, or maybe it would. I don't know.
He said if he's just fed it on strawberries, would the milk taste
so
of strawberries?
That's the question. Can you affect the flavour of milk by what the cow eats? That's what we want to know.
Yeah.
Not about meat, but about milk specifically.
Yeah.
Right, you're on. I like that. And no one's allowed to mention pineapples, all right? This is a family programme. Thank you, Steve. That's quite enough. That's quite enough. I'll find out for you. What is the milk and a cow's diet? I don't think it, because you'd think you'd know about this. You'd think there'd be some delicacy like on cows that have been. Also, they only really eat grass, don't they? Can cows even? Let's find out, all right? I like the question. 12:19 is the time. Dom's in South Woodford. Dom, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
A question is, I'm wondering, what do pelican crossings have to do with pelicans? I was lucky enough, my lovely wife and daughters gave me a mystery hour for my birthday.
Oh, fantastic.
I still haven't come to this question.
I don't think it's in there.
Oh, right. Is there a question in there about why petrol is priced in tenths of a penny? Because since I rang you last time, I still haven't been able to find it out.
I don't know. I do know the answer to this one, though.
Okay.
I really do. It's quite cool, actually. It's for trivia fans. So you've fallen into a trap here of thinking of the bird.
I must admit, I was thinking of the bird, yeah.
Thinking of a pelican.
A bit like a zebra crossing stripy, like a zebra vest.
Yeah, but there you go, you see. Whereas, in fact, what you are describing is a pelican. So what is the difference between, for example, a zebra crossing and a pelican crossing?
The button, the light.
Correct. Who controls the button?
I'm guessing it's not the person who presses that.
No, it is.
It is.
Yeah. And that person, by dint of not being a motorist, they are a...
pedestrian.
What are the first two letters of pedestrian?
Head.
Two letters.
P-E.
P-E. What are the first two letters of the thing that comes on when they press the button? Or indeed, the thing that tells the cars to stop more pertinently. What are the first? What are the first two letters of that?
First two, L-I.
And what are the first three letters of what the pedestrian is doing to the traffic when they press the button?
Annoying?
No, that's not very... That would be pelican crossing, as it's controlled. So it's a pedestrian-like control, pelican.
Pelican. So when does it change to pelican?
I've given you a brilliant answer! Come on!
It is. That's a very nice answer. I'm intrigued. As a bit of a student of language, how it evolved from
Same. I mean, it's nice and easy to remember as well. What then gets confusing is that they didn't. I think they got replaced with puffin crossings, did they, or something like that? So the bird thing was quite deliberate. And is there a two? There's not a two. Is there a toucan crossing as well, which is for pedestrians and cyclists? But anyway, the answer to your question is the right qualifications. Either we've done it before, or I've looked it up myself during my days of having younger children than I currently have, because it's such... I think I've done it. I must have come up before, because I could remember it so clearly. Anyway, there you go. Round of applause for me. I might award myself the board game this week, just to really put the cat among the pelicans. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. Jim's in Glasgow. Jim, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on.
How did they find a tent after the concert at Glastonbury? How do these people find a tent?
You've never been, clearly.
No.
Glastonbury tents. Well, I mean, how do you find your car in a car park?
Well, if it's been going for 50 years, they didn't have any mobile phones. I mean, and a lot of tents are the same. So
how do you find your car in a car park, in a massive car park?
I don't drive.
Oh, you're such a pedant. No, it doesn't. All right, how does anyone find their car in a massive car park?
Well, they've got a set of keys, obviously.
No, you've just done the technology thing. You can't have it both ways. How did anyone find their car in a massive car park in 1974?
Maybe there wasn't that many cars.
Okay, there was loads of cars. The answer is, you know what floor you're on, or you know what bit of the car park you're in. You know what row, or so you've got... And I presume... I've never been to Glastonbury, but I presume it's the same there. The tents, you'll have a little address, won't you? You'll be in field F, row... 7.
Look, it doesn't look like that when I'm looking at it on the TV. It's just a mass of tents.
Well, okay, what's your theory then, Clever Clogs?
I haven't got a clue. I just think they're staggering a bit on it. They've got 4 days.
I I shall try and find out. Well, yeah, I mean, what are the odds on me being wrong, though? Well, I should never say that out loud. It always backfires. But what else could the possible reason be? How else could they do it? Apart from what I've just said, that there's some sort of map involved, some sort of...
If there was a grid.
Key. A grid. A grid.
Yeah, but they could see the first tent on the left is a big green tent. But, you know, there must be some way to do that. I don't know.
I think I've just told you what it is, but I can tell that you're not going to accept my answer, so I shall leave it on the board. And I think we'll confine it this year to someone who's come back this week, someone who's just come back from Glastonbury. 12:24 is the time. Liz is in Wimbledon. Liz, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, Liz.
It's a kind of brain memory thing.
Yeah.
And linked to sort of insomnia. So I know it's not just me that does it, so don't slap me down and say, why am I sharing my personal suffering?
Do this with me? I'd never slap anybody down.
You do. You say that's too weird.
Everyone's a critic today. It's you and Geraldine.
I think I've heard you.
What?
I think I've heard you say that you do it. So you can't get to sleep, so you start trying things to get you to sleep.
Yes.
And a common thing is to try and list things in alphabetical order.
I do that.
Countries in the world, Shakespeare plays.
Yeah. Andorra, Brazil,
musicals,
Cuba, Denmark.
Exactly.
Egypt, France.
No, that's easy. I've moved on to Africa.
Oof.
I've moved on to Africa. And Shakespeare's plays are a nightmare because you get to B and there's no B. So you have to go backwards from Z.
Yeah. What's Z?
The Shakespeare phrase. Otherwise, you just
there's no Z either, is there?
No, but I mean, at least there's some more at that end of the alphabet.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You lose heart if you start.
Yeah, no, you do.
For choice for A.
Poets.
Then you get to B and you've had it.
I did poets recently.
Yeah, I've done poets, musicals.
Auden Blake. It's a funny
English
way you get
novelist.
Stuck, isn't it? Yeah, anyway, what's the question? I love it. Well done.
So the question is, it seems to work.
It does,
invariably.
Doesn't it?
But how? What's happening? Why does concentrating on an alphabetical list of things help you go to sleep? What's the process that's going on?
Well, doesn't it distract you from whatever it is that's keeping you awake?
That's what I thought. But then you're really concentrating on something else.
So it should...
And searching your brain to bring out a country in Africa beginning with V. So you'd think that would keep you awake.
Yeah. Vanuatu.
Now you're just showing off. Hey,
I don't know if that's in Africa or not.
I don't think it is, but I don't want to get into a debate on soggy ground.
No, nor do I. No, I don't think it is either.
So
I think it's
not,
in the Indian Ocean.
I'll try not to be too smart.
It's a great question.
I just want to know how, because obviously it does work for a lot of people. It's not just me.
Front of the brain, back of the brain.
You're not relaxing.
Different
you're
part of the brain.
Concentrating.
Different,
exactly.
That'll be it. But we want someone clever to answer it. You're not going
to accept
more.
Yeah, I want to understand it, because if I understood it more, I might be able to do it even faster, which would be good.
Also learning poems. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have done that. And weirdly, it's not another question because I know that's not allowed.
Correct.
But what's with the fact that I can remember every line of all the stuff I did for O-level and A-level? I could practically recite you Macbeth from start to finish. But
really?
If I try to recite a poem I learned last week, it's gone.
Wow.
So
there is a reason for that. We have done it before, and it will probably pop up again. But that reciting the ones you can remember is probably at least as good a way as doing the list. But anyway, it's horses for courses, Liz, isn't it? It's a nightmare when you can't get away. Except, of course, it's not. You'd welcome a nightmare, because that would mean you were asleep. It's an absolute horror show when you can't get off to sleep. 12:28 is the time. Magnesium. Have you tried magnesium?
Yes and no. I have to take calcium and magnesium for post-cancer treatment. So I'm kind of on that, but not for insomnia.
Maybe look at upping the magnesium dosage. It's worked very well for someone I know.
Yeah.
But it's all...
Okay, I'll have a look. But just a word to the wise, don't try reciting Macbeth to get to sleep.
No, it would give you the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, it's not the best.
No.
Yeah, it's not the best.
Thank you. Just stick with something nice, like a Midsummer Night's Dream. 12:28 is the time. Why does concentrating on something help you fall asleep? And then I'll run through the others as well, but we'll squeeze in one more call before the news. Mark's in Rawtenstall. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James. Hello.
Hello.
It's for Glastonbury.
Yes. Are you just back?
Yes, I am just back.
Fantastic.
It's easy, really. They have the campsites are in colours, and they're in north, south, east, and west.
There you go.
So you generally know where you are if you're in blue east, for example.
Yeah.
And then what I do, I either use Google Maps because you can put you where you parked if you want to. That'll get you close.
Yeah.
And then and the other thing is everyone has flags. They put big flags. You've seen them on when you watch the bands and
there
stuff.
There you go. Jim should have noticed
back to
that.
Their tent.
Shouldn't he?
And, yeah, and they... Well, the funny thing is, I lost my wife when I was watching Dinah Ross.
Oh, no.
And the flag next to where they were standing was a Boris Johnson flag.
Oh, no.
It was terrible.
Was
but
it ironic?
At the same time.
Oh, no, that's Alanis Morissette. Was it an ironic flag?
It was, yes. I can't remember. It had something on it. He had a big long nose.
Something. Oh, good. That's a relief. But you found your wife. You used the. Did you say, where did our love go?
Yes. Where did our love go? I did. I was walking. Anyway. So that's how you find your tent.
So I was right. But, I mean, but you've given us a bit more detail. Flags and colours and like big car parks, really.
Yes. And to be honest with you, what I always do as well is you walk along the road and you'll find something along the road like a, I don't know, an orange, big orange tent. Remember
yeah,
that
yeah.
one?
So you do your own little landmarks.
Degrees. Yeah, that's how you do it. And then the only thing is that when you're drunk and it's, you know, quarter one in the morning, then it gets a bit complicated.
Yeah,
and I don't know how you do that because I'm too old.
Some people don't, and I imagine. They wake up in a field somewhere. They're nowhere near their own tent. Qualifications? I think we know this already.
I went to Glastonbury this year. Oh, I've been to Glastonbury a few years.
Have you? What was the best bit you saw this year?
The best, although Kay Tempest was probably my favourite, and I sat and just cried in a field with, and it was brilliant.
Wow.
It was lovely. And Paul McCartney.
I was going to say, I'd like to have seen
it. It was.
I was teasing my mum the other day. My mum was complaining about she gets terrible pollen, and it limits her movement a bit when she's, you know, the muscles ache and stuff like that. And she mentioned her age, and I pointed out Paul McCartney's 80, Mum. And he's on stage at Glastonbury this weekend. So it's time you bucked your ideas up.
I know. He was amazing. And his voice was amazing. And I just thought, what a man.
I think there's an app now as well for probably finding your tent at Glastonbury. You just pump it in like Google Maps, wouldn't you? Just put in a location.
There is.
Yeah.
There is. If you download the app, it tells you what stage everything is on. And it has a...
But back in the day, it would have been like an old massive car park. You got around. You found your wife, didn't you, just to check? I don't want to leave that hanging.
She's cleaning the bathroom.
She's got nothing to say. Don't get me involved, honestly.
I know. I'm going to clean downstairs in the kitchen.
That's more like it. That's what
we're cleaning down.
So a round of applause for Mark. Thank you. Made me late for the news, but I'd be so engaging. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Welcome to everyone's favourite game show, The Motorway Way, where car dealers compete to give you the best price for your car. Okay, Val, are you ready to sell?
Very ready.
Thousands of car dealers are waiting to bid.
£12,000. £12,200. £12,500.
You've sold your car.
That was easy.
Motorway, the way to sell your car. Sell your car at motorway.co.uk.
56% of customers received a higher sale price than the agreed reserve price.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's a sight you don't see every day. Good Morning Britain clips being played on Russian state TV today after Bernie Eccleston, the Formula One Supremo, revealed that he would take a bullet for Vladimir Putin. How the world turns, eh? Tonsils we've done. What's the origin of the phrase guts for garters? Why does everything in the House of Commons come through the speaker? How do birds know how to make nests? Does a cow's diet affect the flavour of milk? Pelican crossings we've done. Glastonbury tales we've done. Why does concentrating on something help you sleep? And why have I written down animals? What was Steve's question about animals? Why have I written down animals? I should do this stuff off air, really. I've got animals. Was that it? Was that the milk cow question? All right, I'll scrub that one out then. 12:35 is the time. Robin is in Modbury in Devon. Robin, question or answer?
Oh, hello, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Robin.
So cow's milk flavour is affected by the diet.
Is it?
You have to be quite extreme, but I know from my grandfather and my father and from studies I've done that the milk from cows that eat too much wild garlic... was rejected.
Yeah.
It was rejected on the basis that it tainted the flavour of the milk.
Oh, that's interesting.
So farmers back in the day had to make sure that their pastures didn't have too much wild garlic in.
Nice. What about positives? Is there any equivalent ingestion that might have a pleasant effect on the milk?
No, I think if they have a good forage-based, mainly grass diet, they're going to have...
But nice milky milk for one. Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with the question in a way, isn't it? Because, I fully appreciate that Steve's boy loves the idea of feeding a cow loads of strawberries and then having strawberry-flavoured milk. But that might work if you fed them loads and loads of strawberries, would it?
It's possible, but I don't think it's something that anyone's ever done. But you have to be very careful because they need forage in their diet.
I was about to say, I mean, nobody tried this. Yeah, no, exactly that. And you want milky milk. That's the whole point of making it. You want it to be as milky as possible. You don't want it to taste like anything else. So it's a slightly odd premise. I like that. Qualifications?
Yeah. Well, I'm a retired dairy farmer and generations of farmers before me.
Lovely. Did you retire to Devon or did you farm in Devon? Because you're a long way from where you grew up.
I came down here to farm, but found myself, I moved into teaching. I became an agriculture teacher.
Fantastic.
But I've retired from that subsequently as well.
Now you're just living the life of Riley with your feet up, Mystery Hour on the radio and a lovely glass of milk in your hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Round of applause.
Everybody should have a lovely glass of milk.
I couldn't agree more. So it's very good for your bones. 12:37 is the time. Tom's in Camberley. Tom, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello,
question.
Tom. Carry on.
So my question, James, I've been holding off Googling this one.
Go on.
So with water boils at 100 degrees and goes from a liquid to a gas.
Yeah.
So I just put my washing out the other day and I thought, why is my washing dry?
Mm.
You know, if I do a load of washing, put it on the rack, it could be in the house, 20 degrees, no wind, no direct sunlight, you know, a couple of hours later, the washing's dry. So that towel, that clothing is covered in liquid water and it's dry, it's evaporating. But why is the water turning from a liquid to a gas at a low temperature?
Well, how do clothes dry? Or why do clothes dry is the question, really. Because it's not at a low temperature. It's going to be, because you know that if you leave it in the corner of the bathroom on the floor, it can stay wet forever.
Well, it could stay wet for a couple of days.
No, it'll stay wet forever. Or okay. No, it won't. Eventually it'll get crusty, won't it? Eventually it'll sort of... So why do clothes dry? How do clothes dry, given that the water evaporating, nothing like the temperature that you'd expect to be needed. Either, Tom, I'm sure you agree, this is either a brilliant question or a really stupid one. But if it's a really stupid one, we're both missing the point, if that's any consolation to you.
That was my thinking. Yeah. You know, I know where the water's going.
It doesn't have to boil. What about, because it doesn't have to be boiling hot to have, like, humidity, does it? To have water in the atmosphere.
No.
But how does it come out of your clobber?
It's going from a liquid on your clothes into a gas, into the air. But why is it doing it at
vapor?
I'd understand if it was outside with the sun on it and the wind on it, blowing it around, but if it was just in a dark room, it was still dry.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely... Well, like I say, it's either brilliant or absolutely ridiculous. If it's absolutely ridiculous, I shall be disowning it and blaming it entirely on you in the next 10 minutes or so. 12:39 is the time. Why do clothes dry? That's it. Yeah, go on. 0345 6060 973. Lewis is in Morden. Lewis, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Lewis.
So, did we as humans invent maths or discover maths?
It wasn't me. How do you mean? Do you mean it was a scientific phenomenon?
Yeah, I guess because obviously maths is kind of like all around us. It's kind of like a universal language that kind of employed throughout, you know, the world and the universe. But it's also like a theory that, you know, only us as humans use, as far as I know anyway. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure animals don't use
it. What does the discovery of maths look like if you follow me?
I don't know. I mean, I guess early kind of civilization.
What's the difference between mass and weight?
No, not maths. Sorry, maths.
Maths?
Yeah, maths.
God, we could have been here forever. It's not just me that misheard you. I've got maths on the screen in front of me. And it's not because I'm short-sighted. It's got nothing to do with toenails. What, did we invent or discover maths?
Yeah, mathematics, yes.
Well, I mean, it's words, really, isn't it? In the first instance, it's you've got two apples and I give you two more apples. How many apples have you got now?
I mean, in when you boil it down simply like that, I guess, yeah. I was talking more of like the theory, kind of the universal.
Yeah, well, we discovered that. I mean, discovered or invented. It's either a brilliant question or a bonkers one, because we worked at things like trigonometry were discovered, not invented, yeah. Because a triangle is a timeless phenomenon, and working out the relationship between what we now call the hypotenuse, the adjacent and the opposite, or looking at trigonometry, that is discovering explanations for things that already existed. That must have been discovered. It couldn't have been invented, because it has to fit to something that is pre-existing, like a triangle, or a square or a circle. So trigonometry would have been discovered, wouldn't it?
Yes, but if we were going off the fact that, you know, early humans use math, then surely we would have invented it, no?
We would have invented the words that have become numbers, or we would have invented the notations that denote 2, 3, or 4. But not, we can't have discovered the fact that 2 + 2 = 4, because that's a timeless fact. All we've done is put into work. Wow, this is getting a bit philosophical, isn't it, Lewis? I mean, crikey, yeah. What were you doing last night? did we invent or discover maths?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, that's probably an even bigger question than did we invent or discover maths? But I shall. So I'm going to just adjust my notes accordingly. I don't know if that's answerable. I mean, maths is so huge as well. It's like things that were already there. We understood the patterns and the relationships that they contain, but we discovered them. Listen, someone with a better training than me, which is not going to be hard to achieve, can have a crack at answering that one more fully. Colleen is in Ealing. Colleen, question or answer?
Answer, please, James.
Carry on.
So it's about the sleep-based question and using thinking. So when we go to bed at night, normally what we've avoided during the day kind of rebounds, and it's normally quite threat-based. So it's thinking about future catastrophes. Have I left the window open? Burglars are going to get in, or sort of future stuff. And it's got a meaning about the self. Or we go to the past and things that we haven't processed, or our inner critic comes out. So we're activating our threat system, which is our sympathetic, nervous sort of fight or flight system. We can't drop off.
Yeah.
So if we use that kind of technique, it's very neutral-based. So we're sort of bypassing our sympathetic nervous system. We're basically distracted from that.
Yeah.
And so essentially then we're able to drift off, because you need to be able to drift off into sleep. And that's why techniques like therapy or mindfulness-based stuff kind of work, because they help us to sort of process that threat-based stuff.
It's a sort of self-distraction technique, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, definitely. Of stuff that's kind of unresolved kind of psyche.
Yeah, so you could still be working really hard, concentrating really hard, but you're concentrating really hard on something that isn't going to adrenalize you or activate your sympathetic nervous system.
It hasn't got a meaning to the self, so it's all, you know, it's not a threat to ourself and our world. It's kind of neutral stuff, so we're able to bypass that.
Fantastic.
And go into probably our parasympathetic, which is quite relaxing, and we can let go and drift off into bliss.
Into bliss indeed. And you catch yourself sometimes, don't you? You catch yourself nodding off. After I lost my dad, quite a long time actually, I'd suddenly remember that I'd lost my dad, and it would bring me right back from the very brink of sleep.
Totally.
Not in a very pleasant way. And that's probably when I had the biggest problems getting off to sleep, because every time you remembered it, your sympathetic nervous system really, really kicks in. It's not just like a mild tickle. It's like an, oh my God.
Exactly. It's a big meaning to ourselves as people.
Exactly. Oh, well, brilliant answer. Qualifications?
So I'm a cognitive behavioural therapist and trauma therapist, so we deal with trauma, unresolved, and sleep, and all that kind of stuff.
Do nicely, and you've come up in your studies then? In your practice, there you go. Great stuff, and great work that you're doing as well. I think if everybody could have the benefit of somebody like you in their lives, then the world would be a much, much, much happier, kinder, calmer place. Round of applause.
Sometimes.
Well, of course. Oh, thank you, Colleen. It's 12:45.
Hello, I'm Giovanna Fletcher, and Journey to the Magic is back. Yes, the official podcast from Walt Disney Travel Company, where we talk all things Disney holidays, is returning for Series 2. This year, I'm joined by the likes of Alicia Dixon, Vogue Williams, Ronan Keating, Jeanette Manrara, and the voice of Encanto's Mirabel herself, Stephanie Beatrix. You can find it in all your normal podcast listening places. Happy listening.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:47 is the time you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Oh, good. Professor Hall is here. Professor Hall is, I should tell you in advance. Well, no, I'll tell you at the end if he gets it right, although I don't think he's ever got it wrong. Question James. Or answer? Hello. Hello.
James, there was a delightful question about quartet of changes of phase.
Yes.
Towels and stuff on the line.
Oh, clothes, drying. Yes, go on. Yeah. Not just on the line, but also in areas where you wouldn't necessarily expect them to dry, but they do.
Yes. I was talking about this very thing at a village science show. We had fair in our village.
Oh, lovely.
And it was delightfully Wallace and Gromit, if I may say.
Yes.
And we talked about solids melting into liquids, liquids boiling into gases, and liquids freezing and gases condensing. And this is what it's all about. And we need to differentiate between boiling and evaporating, because boiling happens at one temperature, in the case of water at 100 degrees, but evaporation happens at all temperatures, and it's all to do with the movement of the molecules. If you imagine a glass of water, for the sake of argument, all the water molecules in are randomly buzzing around and moving around. And by chance, some of them will be moving up. And if they move up with enough heat energy to actually escape from the body of the water, that's evaporation. And that occurs at all temperatures. Boiling, on the other hand, occurs at one temperature, and it's when the bonds between the water molecules all rupture and it all at once turns into steam.
Right. So eventually it will all dissipate.
Yeah,
even without being at a very high temperature. Well, yeah. What temperature does it have to be to stop doing that, to stay wet forever?
Actually, surprisingly, ice sublimes.
Siberia. From solid to gas straight away?
Yes. Okay. In fact, in Siberia, they put their clothes out. The clothes freeze, but nevertheless, they dry. And that's how freeze-drying of coffee works, which is also very interesting.
Yes, it is. We've done that before.
Yeah. So we need to sort of redefine our definition of boiling. My daughter says, Daddy, I'm boiling. And I say, are you really changing from the liquid phase to the gas phase? And she says, I wish Mummy married an economist. So
there it is. Right, qualifications?
I'm very, very lucky, as much as my employer allows me to profess science to society, and I'm a professor of public understanding of science at the University of Brighton.
And here it is, your umpteenth round of applause. We just did his qualifications. Sorry, I'm having a private conversation with Keith. Damien is in Ilford. Damien, question or answer?
Answer, hopefully.
Carry on.
It's the maths, whether it's invented or... I think it's both.
Yeah, I do too. And why are they still writing maths on the screen? Why are you still writing maths on the screen when it's about maths? You're trying to make me sound all confused and silly. It's bad enough with the toenails. Not you, Damien. I'm just having another private conversation. She didn't realise. Carry on, Damien, sorry.
Well, I don't know whether I know this because I'm old enough to remember decimalisation, but I remember at school asking what it was all about and why we were... changing our money when I was at an age when I'd only just worked out how many pence there were in a pound and that sort of thing. Admittedly, the decimalisation's better, but it's just international contact and relations. So somebody had to decide at some stage that there were 360 degrees in a circle and a right angle is 90 I presume somebody had to decide somewhere. Well, how many hours there are in a day.
Yeah, and breaking a circle into 360 degrees.
Exactly. Once you've done that, you then communicate the math. So I suppose years and years ago, when people traded from one tribe to another, they had different forms of currency. It started off with bartering, and then somebody had to come along and make a coin. But you didn't know whether your coin from Village A was the how many coins from Village B that was worth. And somebody has to invent the means to do it. And over the years,
In other words, you remind us, and I love it when this pops up in Mystery Hour because it's the only part of the program where I can't normally bring it into proceedings. What you're describing is how regulatory alignment plays a very, very important role in civilization as we know it.
That sounds great.
So imagine a country that actually decided independently to withdraw from regulatory alignment that, for example, I don't know, the largest single market in the world enjoyed and employed. How mad would that be?
Crazy. In fact, one of the questions that was asked by one of your researchers who started asking me questions is if, cause it's something I never thought about, if there was a parallel universe somewhere. and everything on the on our Earth was mirrored in a parallel universe. What's the likelihood that they would have invented the same forms of measurement? And probably not.
So you rang into Mystery Hour, and one of my colleagues asked you about that. What are they smoking in there?
Just expanding my mind.
Clearly, qualifications.
I did maths O level. I think I had.
So did I, mate. But I don't know if I'd chalk that one up.
I think it's just being old enough to remember decimalisation.
I'm working it out
from 12 pence to 10 pence, and not really understanding why.
Oh, and the simple answer is because we say so, really, and then everything else falls into line behind it.
We were told that's what they did in Europe, and so we had to do what Europe says, which is something you're quite in agreement with. I think
you might be right on that. Carry on. Round of applause for Damien. It is 12:53. Still got quite a few that need answers on that one, haven't we? Maths, I hope Lewis is happy with that. I thought it was a good answer. How did the where do clothes dry? We've done the concentrated stone. No, we haven't. So we've done the milk. I've got, but how do birds know how to make nests? What's the origins of the phrase guts for garters? And why does everything go through the speaker at the House of Commons, or rather in the House of Commons? I need to apologise, James, to the chap that just asked about how you find your tent at Glastonbury. I thought it was a very silly question because you just remember. Cut to me coming out of the shops back to the car park a few moments ago and completely forgetting where my car is. I shall pass the apology on. It was Jim, wasn't it? I didn't think it was the sparkliest question we've ever had, but you're right, it wasn't quite as daft as perhaps we initially presumed. Hiromi is in Epsom. Hiromi, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Do you think that fish feel the water? Like, when they're in the sea, do you think they feel wet?
Does a fish know it's wet?
Yeah. Like, do you think they feel the water?
Well, who's going to be able to answer that question?
I don't know, like a fish. A zoologist.
A zoologist. Well, they know when they're not in the water, don't they?
Yeah, but do you think they feel the water?
I don't
know. Actually,
do fish feel water? I shall find out. Well, I don't know if I will, because we haven't got a great deal of time left, but I should certainly ask, do fish feel water, if that is a digestible phenomenon? Do fish feel water? Didn't we have is water wet the other day? And the answer is, of course, that it's not. Water is not wet. And yet people say it as if it's a bit like saying, is the Pope a Catholic, or do bears do their business in the woods? Water makes things wet. It's not in and of itself wet, but does a fish know it's wet? Does a fish feel water? It's all gone a bit parallel universe in this studio today. John's in Golders Green. John, question or answer?
It's actually an answer, and unfortunately I was speaking to your researcher as the previous gentleman was giving an answer to the math question.
Oh.
I listened to the first line, and I'm not sure that he was going to... I don't think he's going to say what I was going to say.
Go on then, let's find out.
I don't really know what he said, but there are some basic laws you learn when you study maths at university, which I did, which is that 3 + 4 is the same as 4 + 3, which may be intuitively obvious, but it's not if you're in the dinosaur age. Similarly, a number times a number, like 3 × 4, is the same as 4 × 3.
Yeah.
Also, a number times 1 is the same as 1 times the number.
You're not refuting itself. Anything that the other fella said. You're just coming at it from...
I don't know what he said.
No, I know. I'm just telling you not to worry. You're just coming at it from a slightly different angle.
So
we were looking...
3 × 1 is equal to 3. Any number multiplied by 1 is equal to the number. And similarly, any number multiplied by 0 is equal to 0.
Yeah, but was that discovered? That was discovered, though.
No, it wasn't. Well,
it must have been.
To be proved.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I spent a whole term at university proving that 3 + 4 was equal to 4 + 3.
A whole term?
Most of the term.
Blimey.
Which sounds unbelievable.
I thought I had a wasted youth when I was at college. No, I'm joking. But you still have to prove it. So it wasn't, so it was discovered, not invented.
I think when you prove something, you have to first hypothesise it, and then you have to prove it by showing it exists for all situations.
To be fair, the only thing we're doing, the original answer was that it's a little bit of both. There's some invention and some discovery, because you have to invent the concept of calling a number, don't you? But you discover the relationship between what you have called numbers.
Don't start on numbers, on the idea of calling a number, because that's another term.
How long were you at university for?
There's a lot that you take in. There's a lot of maths that we take for granted that actually we can't take for granted. So the concept of what a number actually is.
Yes.
Even things like bases. So we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6, 9, 8, yeah. 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
And then we call it 10 and then we start again. But there are other bases like 6.
No, of course there are. So look, the answer is some of it's invented and some of it's discovered.
I don't know.
Nor do I.
If you want to define it by that.
Yeah.
But math certainly had to be, we certainly had to invent theories which we had to prove for things that we actually take for granted today.
No, I have no idea whether anyone's agreeing or disagreeing with anyone now, but I'm going to give you, what are your qualifications? Two terms at university.
Two terms.
A round of applause for John. Oh, I've got to pick a winner now. Do you know what? I'm going to give it to Mark and his wife who are cleaning the house. They can have it this week because the Glastonbury answers, because they both somehow managed to get on air. And I like the idea of them having a little reward when they finish their domestic chores this afternoon. And do you know what? First time in a while, I'm going to bring this in bang on time. I've been James O'Brien. Here's Sheila Fogarty.
Terrible timing.
You're not even ready. You're
coughing.
Do you want me to carry on? I've got 10 minutes. I've got some material.
I'm ready. I'm good to go.
There
Thanks, James.